You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Monster Monday presented, of course, by DraftKings. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, 5 teams, 7 years. You know this, most of you. Although, you know what? We do get some new listeners pretty much every episode, which is awesome. Love to have you guys. Welcome. We do this 3 times a week in the off season, daily during the season. But there's a bunch of other shows as well. You'll be able to check out Emory Hunt on today's College Draft Podcast, which I know a lot of you thoroughly enjoy, especially this time of year. Highly recommend binge listening or binge watching to the College Draft Podcast, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL. We will have winners this week. We announced some late last week. Spread the word via social media. We notice. Take advantage of any of our sponsors and email it to me. I see it. Give us a shout out on YouTube. I love it. YouTube.com/RossTuckerNFL. Do any of those things. Send it over to my attention, ross@rostucker.com, and I'll send you a little something-something in the mail. Speaking of something-something, how about having special teams coordinator John Fossil from the Dallas Cowboys to talk not only about the kickoff rule, but sort of about the evolution of special teams in recent years. It's Big Show time.
The Big Show.
All right, so if you're going to talk about the new kickoff rule, why not bring on one of the guys that helped to create it and a guy I think is, I don't know if it's universally, but pretty much widely considered to be the best special teams coordinator in the NFL. I'm talking about John Fossil from the Dallas Cowboys. Coach, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Ross, anytime we get to talk special teams, I'm in, man.
You know what? I'm glad to hear you say that. And it's funny because I was looking you up because my last year was 07 and you got into the NFL in 2005. And so before we even get into the kickoff rule and all that stuff, just from 05 to 24, so I guess you've been in 19, 20 years, how much have special teams changed just in your 19, 20 years?
I mean, gosh, yeah, in 20 years, it's been a ton. Not only the kickoff return part that everybody's talking about now, but the punt return game has changed. The field goal, and you know, field goal block game has changed. Not only has it changed, you know, personnel or play styles, but the rules have changed, especially in the kickoff return structure from the old 5-man wedge to 4-man wedge. Then you can only go 2-man wedge. Then there's no man wedge. And now we're into a whole different world. And the punt return game has probably been the most consistent. But there's been personnel changes and what teams kind of go to on that phase of the game. You remember field goal block, you could go 8x3 and triple push. You know, we've outlawed that. So it's been cool changes, and football is constantly evolving. And it's up to us to stay one step ahead. And I think what we'll talk about this kickoff thing is part of the evolution.
So funny, man, because you don't even know this, but – my career ended. You were on the other sideline. It was 2007 in the preseason. You were in Baltimore. Yep. I was in Washington on the 4-man wedge. And I crushed this linebacker. I think his name was Prescott Burgess. He was like a rookie from Michigan.
He was.
And he, I think he got like a concussion, separated shoulder. And I got up and was like, yeah. And my whole arm was totally numb, like by far the worst stinger I ever got, right?
Yep.
So I was competing for the swing inside job. This is crazy, John. It turns out I was going to play the whole second half, you know, trying to be the sixth man on the team.
Yep.
And we had lightning multiple times. They canceled the game at halftime.
I remember that.
I go in after the game. I tell them about my neck. I get an MRI. I herniated my C5, C6 in my neck, and they did tests in my hands and feet. Yeah. I bruised my spinal cord.
Yeah.
And so I said to the Redskins spine doctor, I was like, you know, what do you think? And he's like, I think you're 28 and you went to Princeton and you should get a real job. But it's just wild. John, I would have played the whole second half. Like, I would have played the whole second half with that, not knowing, you know what I mean?
Ross, I mean, I remember that because I was obviously there, and I remember the rain and the lightning. And just a couple of things from that is, and this is going a little bit deep, but as a coach, one thing that I suffer from a little bit is coaching guilt. And I know that might sound kind of weird, but what was asked of players back then was not a healthy thing. And so all these rule changes that we've made have made the game not only safer, but made it better. You know, looking back at four-man wedges and being able to go field goal block, triple push, that's just not good enough, you know, and we did it. And so I still have memories of like, gosh, I can't believe I asked a guy to do this, you know, because it put guys like you in, you know, tough spots. And that's why I'm just so excited for some of the things that we've done to make football better. And this is a huge part of it. And it's going to hopefully trickle down to the college level and the high school level. And it's our job and responsibility as pros to make football better, make football safer. And I hate to hear those stories because they're so common, you know, back then, but we're doing better.
Well, you shouldn't feel any guilt because that's what the rules were back then. And so you were just going by what the rules. It's the people that make the rules, if anybody, that should feel guilt. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
I still laugh about being in those meetings where they said the wedge cannot get split. And then they would tell the other guys, you have to split the wedge. I'm like, we're in the same meeting here. Oh. Like, what are we talking about? And the triple push on extra point and field goal. I mean, that's just not good. I have a bunch of stories there too. Yeah. But I want to move on to the future. Obviously, you're an excitable guy. It's pretty clear when you're on the sideline. You're fun to watch. You don't say that about coaches very often. I am very passionate about football. And I love when you can feel that, you know, from someone else. And I sense that and I feel that when I see you on the sideline. Why are you so excited about the new kickoff rule?
I think it's kind of what we've talked about, Ross. You know, how do we make the play better and safer? And one of the things that's exciting about it is the last couple of years, the return percentage has gone from 43% to 37% to this past year, it was 22%. And so one out of five times the ball is in play. It's not a viable play. And it's such a great play, the kickoff return, where it's the oldest school of, you know, 11 on 11, and here they come, kind of old Braveheart Gladiator style. but having the ball not in play so much just wasn't good enough. So we were tasked with how do we put the ball in play more often, but at the same time, make it safer. And that's a tough task, you know, have the injury rate go down, but have the return percentage go up. So we looked at the XFL model and said, this is a good starting point because the ball is in play a lot, but it starts out in close quarter combat where there's not a lot of speed and space and running and high collisions. So that was our starting point. And we kind of learned from some unintended consequences that the XFL went through and said, okay, now that we get to put our stamp on it, what would we do to take away some of those kind of sloppier looking plays that they faced, and how do we make it our own? And I think we did that, and I think it's going to be a really cool concept.
So in 2005, your first year in the NFL with the Ravens, how many guys do you think were on the roster because they were core special teamers? Like, that's why they were on the roster versus – and you don't need to talk about the Cowboys last year, but just kind of in general, if you had to guess in on average around the league, because it feels to me like it went from like 6 to 8 to 2 or 3, just looking at teams' rosters, if that sounds even close to you.
No, that's about right on. So in 2005, you know, if you're asking me, I would have said probably 5 or 6 dedicated special teams guys. I remember Gary Stills and Bart Scott, you know, was an undrafted guy who was a special teams guy. Even in Adalius Thomas, who's an outside linebacker, you know, gunner. But, yeah, there's 5 or 6, like, hey, this is your job to be a core special teams guy. And that was when the roster was probably 45 guys on game day. And it felt like the last couple of years, you know, it was maybe 3. And it was because the touchback percentage was so high on kickoff, teams would say, hey, we're only going to be playing 8 to 9 reps of punt versus punt return, and the rest of the balls are touchbacks on kickoff return. So we don't need that many. But now it's got to swing back for the teams that are going to be the best at it to, you know, hey, you got six dedicated special teams guys that can also serve as backups on offense or defense, but they're dressing because of their core special teams capabilities. And I think it's going to swing back that way. So it's healthy for the, you know, not only returners and kickers, but for the core special teams guys who are critical parts of the game, at least my opinion. I'm clearly biased.
It's a really interesting point. So you think almost immediately it'll swing back to being five or six guys. It'll double it up. What about the body types, John? Because I was talking with Eric Galco, who was part of the XFL group, several years ago that worked on this initially. And he was thinking that because of the close proximity, we might see some bigger bodies. There might be more linebackers, tight end, fullback types, as opposed to, it seems like there have been more and more DBs and receiver types. Agree, disagree, just kind of your thoughts initially. I know, look, it's April, right? There's a long way to go. I'm sure you'll be working on it all off season, but just initially, where do you think that the lean will go in terms of body types?
I think you probably get a pretty common consensus that you're looking at the pass rush type bodies, the outside linebacker, inside linebacker, tight end bodies, the guys that are maybe a little bit bigger and longer that, you know, even guys that you would put on kickoff now, but you didn't before because they maybe couldn't run from the 35-yard line and get there in time. So, like I said, you know, the Bart Scott, Gary Steele, Zadarius Thomas, I'm going back, you know, 15, 20 years now, but the bigger bodies, the closer quarter combat guys, you know, the guys that can punch and separate because action happens immediately. There's no run up to everything happening. You know, the guys that can wiggle and squirt through, maybe not, might not be as valuable or successful because they're not going to be a lot of room to navigate because it's all starting out where you would be when the ball gets caught and there's just not as much wiggle room. So, you know, a fast guy, you might have to have him dive off the edges, more like a punt play, you know, and I'm kind of speculating because I don't think anybody truly knows, but maybe put your speed on the outside like the gunners and you put your big bodies on the inside and try to jam it all up. But we're going through that right now. And what's cool, Ross, is we have, it's not an unknown because there's 591 XFL kickoff returns over two seasons that we've been able to study and dissect. So even though this is a new to the NFL and it's our hybrid model, there's a lot of evidence from this other league of what was good, what was bad, body type, schematics, drive starts that we do have evidence of. So it's not totally an unknown, but it's going to be a little unknown the first couple of weeks of the season, what everybody's doing, because nobody's going to have any ability to scout to know what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. And you guys won't show what you're going to do in the preseason. So the opening week will be interesting. It's funny because on one of my other shows, looking at the rules, the way you guys have laid it out there, if the ball goes in the air to the end zone, it's a touchback to the 30, correct?
Yes.
But if it bounces in the landing zone and goes into the end zone, it comes out to the 20.
Yes.
Okay. So one of my co-hosts on the Even Money podcast, he believes that special teams coordinators are going to try to see if their kickers can kick line drives that bounce in the landing zone and go into the end zone. I know it's been talked about. I'm sure you've thought about it. And I'm guessing you're probably going to tell me that that's harder than it looks.
No, I don't think so. I mean, our kickers are so skilled that if you said, hey, put it at a 3.2 hang time, and I want you to kind of line drive it to the right numbers at the 6-yard line, you put a big hula hoop out there. Speaking for our guy, he could come pretty close to nailing that. Not every time, but the accuracy is pretty incredible. So what we did to knowing that that could be part of the game is we said, hey, compared to the XFL who only allowed one returner, let's allow us to go a two returner look, because one of the problems that the XFL faced was the ball on the ground, probably a little bit too often, which created some sloppy starts. So for us, you can go one returner, but if a team's going to try to dart a football directionally, you know, can that one returner get to those directional kicks? And if not, then you got to go a two returner look, which probably now negates the kickoffs team's ability to throw a ball into the landing zone and have it roll into the end zone for a drive start at the 20. I don't know if you're following me, but
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of cool gamesmanship and strategy with the kick intent versus one returner, two returner. You know, does a kickoff team disguise their kick direction? Does a kickoff, you know, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff that coaches are going to have to be on top of their game to strategize the best way to play both sides of the ball. And we're going through that right now, Ross. You know, the last couple months and even a couple of years, I've been looking at the XFL. It's the concept. It's, you know, where should we start the kicker, the kickoff? But now we're diving deep into, okay, how are we going to use our kickoff team personnel? What formation are we going to use? Are we going to directionally kick it or middle kick it? And if we directionally kick it, do we show them directional kick with personnel? So, I mean, there's so much to dive into, which is cool because the creative part of the game is going to go way up, where last year, to be honest, we ran one kickoff return the entire season because we knew we were only going to return one ball every two games. You know, Kevontae Turpin had 10 returns on kickoff the whole season. So it's changing the whole game for us as coaches and players, which is good.
Are you finally going to allow, since there's two returners, are you going to allow Micah Parsons to be the other returner? Because I live in Harrisburg, John.
Yep.
Oh. I went to his third high school football game ever. Yep. And I called Penn State. I was like, yeah, you need to offer this kid a scholarship tomorrow. Yep. Even him returning kicks. I mean, you know what he's like. Can you even imagine like him in high school returning kicks? It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. I'm sure he's going to try. I bet you he's probably already lobbied you in the past to try to return kicks.
Oh, you know Micah. So he has lobbied me in the past to just be the primary kickoff returner. I'm like, Micah, that's the question. You got to go a little further up than me on that one. But would I love to see him back there? Absolutely. Because he would be fantastic. He would catch it and he'd run wild and he'd probably get incredible yards. But that ain't going to happen. I'm aware of that. Put them on the kickoff side? Absolutely, because it's basically down half. You know, there's first, second, third down on kickoff. But this is going to be like the kind of before first down play. So I remember watching Mike on kickoff cover at Penn State as a freshman because I was scouting Nick Scott, a player we had drafted to the Rams. Then I was looking at Cam Brown also. But I was like, who is that guy on kickoff? When he was a freshman, and then, you know, you look him up, I'm like, oh, I don't know who he is, but he'll probably be all right someday. But Micah has asked about being a primary kickoff returner. That hasn't been allowed yet. Probably not going to be allowed unless you say, hey, you know, in the game, we're down by six and there's 8 seconds left in the game and we got to score a touchdown and kick return to win it. Maybe we put Micah back there as a second returner.
Well, the thing is, though, is Turpin's really good.
Right.
So on the one hand, it's funny because on the one hand, there's going to be a lot more returns, which is a huge positive because you might have the best returner in the league or one of them. On the other hand, there are people that think the return will be different and thus, you know, maybe different body types or different people should be the returners. I guess what I don't understand about that, John, is you don't hardly ever go live doing that. So, like, how do you know? How are you going to know who's your best returners now in this style of kickoff return without having a whole lot of reps, live reps to really see, have them see how they do live with it?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, Ross. And sometimes I know some teams have fallen into finding their guy because of attrition. You know, this guy gets dinged and say, hey, we need you to go back there. So sometimes it happens through attrition, but most of the time it'll happen like, for us, we know Kevontae Turpin's our primary kick returner. So our job as coaches is to say, okay, what does he do best? And we know what that is. And let's make sure we, you know, schematic ourselves into what he does best. You know, he's an elusive, darting, maybe not necessarily tackle breaking runner, but how do we get him into space? You know, if you have a returner that's more of like a big running back bruiser, then you design your return around him. So the coaches have the abilities to know who your number one guy is and run kickoff returns that are going to be best suited for that type of body type. So I don't think you're going to say this guy's the best type of body type for kick returner, or this guy is. I think it comes down to, you know, this is the best returner available for us to draft or sign as a free agent. Let's get him, and we'll schematic ourselves around that. Like Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, the day after this thing went live with the kickoff rules, they signed Cordarrelle Patterson. And I'm sure Coach Danny Smith up there will say, hey, Cordarrelle, you know, what do you do best? And I'll design something around what you like. And so that's kind of how it works. But I think all body types, Ross, are going to fit as returner profiles. It's just, you know, which guys are really good and how do you scheme up what they do best.
And then it's more how you scheme from there. It's like certain running backs you run certain running plays with.
Yep.
Certain other running backs you run different running plays with. Kind of that. Like, who do you have? And then that's the play you'll run, basically.
Yeah, so if you've got a big running back, you know, and they kick it to my right, I'm probably going to run a sideline right return, kind of like an outside zone play, you know. But if you got a real fast, elusive, maybe not tackle breaker, maybe on that kick right, you run some type of middle bounce and try to get them on the edges and make them cover the whole width of the field instead of trying to just get it up in there vertically. So that's why we're in here in the dungeon, just grinding it out, seeing what's going to work best and who we got. So that's part of the challenge of a coach is like, okay, this is my guy. What is he really good at? And let's highlight his strengths with our schematics and highlight that, you know, and whatever he doesn't do a very good job of, let's just not do that. And so it's, football is not that complicated, but we can complicate it sometimes.
John, thank you so much for the time. This was awesome. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Ross. Anytime, man. Love talking ball.
Awesome chat with John Fossil. It's cool anytime you get an active player, active coach. Not easy to do. Those guys are so busy. Not easy to know what beer to drink, unless you're me, and you already have the knowledge that Labatt Blue Light is by far the best tasting light beer of all time. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Tux Takes.
All right, Ross, the Houston Texans, they wiped out the final 3 years of Stephon Diggs' contract, and they give him a $3.5 million raise.
Right, so there's other stuff to get to, and we'll get to momentarily, but I thought this was sort of the juiciest thing that had happened since last Thursday morning show. So this will be a new segment for us. I'm going to make it a Good Ranchers Meaty Monday, the meatiest thing that we have to talk about today. It's presented by GoodRanchers.com, America's best meat delivered to your door. Use code Ross for 15% off a better way to buy meat at GoodRanchers.com. You know, I don't like the trade for Stephon Diggs as much for the Houston Texans after this contract adjustment. First of all, you trade a second-round pick for only 1 year of Diggs services. You can't get a comp pick because you shorten the contract. And you give him a $3.5 million raise for that same 1 year that you didn't even have to do. They say they're doing it because they want him to be supremely motivated, I believe, to perform very well. What about the opposite? What if Nico Collins is getting the ball a lot? What if they're giving the ball to Tank Dell a lot? I feel like this could really go either way with Stephon Diggs in Houston. And a second-round pick for 1 year, it's a little bit much.
A lot of contract news. The Eagles, they re-signed Avonte Maddox to a one-year deal, and they give Jordan Mailata a three-year extension for $22 million a year. Carolina, New England. Carolina gives star defensive tackle Derek Brown a massive deal. The Patriots ink defensive back Kyle Duggar to a four-year, $58 million deal, and edge rusher Kyle Van Noy back with the Ravens on a two-year deal. Bills sign offensive tackle Leo Collins to a two-year deal as well.
Well, Van Noy and Clowney both skipped training camp last year, at least most of it. Now they're both already signed before the draft after those years they had. Like the Eagles bringing back Avonte Maddox, it's not nearly the same amount of money because of his injury issues. Mailata, we were all over that on social media, at Ross Tucker NFL. Just an incredible story, what he's been able to do. Love, love, love when teams like the Panthers and the Patriots reward their own guys that are very deserving of contracts like this. And I would say the only other thing to talk about, Jack, is just some of the off-the-field stuff. You know, Rashee Rice, the receiver for the Chiefs, his Lawyer said that he was, in fact, driving one of the vehicles that was in that accident. Texas University defensive tackle, University of Texas D tackle Tavondre Sweat, that huge nose tackle, might be a second or third round pick. He got a DUI over the weekend. Not good at all. But the Even Money podcast is. Make sure you're checking it out tomorrow. I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. Mother's Day will be here in a month. Get ahead of the game. You know, you're much more likely to be successful in life if you're proactive than reactive. How about backofficescheduler.com, steakhousesports.com, humanheadnyc.com, sporticulture, and Pizza Boy Brewing.